Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's hard to believe it's time to wrap another year of Louisiana Eats programming. To reminisce about this wonderful year, we're going to revisit seasonal brews with Carlos Knott and Louis Michaud of Bayou Teche Brewing. And then we'll hear from Drew Ramsey about Hubig's Pie's rebuilding status. The Good Eggs farm-to-fridge delivery program has exploded since we interviewed them earlier this year. They were just named the number one food happening of 2013 by Buzz.com. And of course we have to talk donut bread pudding and other road food adventures with our house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. So sit back and enjoy one last listen to Louisiana Eats 2013. Friends at Bayou Teche Brewing in Arnoville are experts at taking ancient beer-making methods and adapting them in special Louisiana ways. Bayou Teche founder Carlos Knott and his favorite sidekick Louis Michaud of the Lost Bayou Ramblers stopped by with the new brews from the Bayou just before Mardi Gras time. I understand you've got a Mardi Gras beer brewing?
We sure do. It's an annual release of ours called Courier de Mardi Gras. Our Mardi Gras in our part of Louisiana is much different than over here in New Orleans. And we wanted to celebrate that ancient tradition, that Courier de Mardi Gras, with a French-style beer. It's a Bière de Mars, which is a March beer in English.
And Mardi Gras is a little early, so I guess we're just jumping on the March beer a little
early. Well, you know, sometimes we get it in March. So. But in France, it's a style of beer that's brewed in farmhouses. And it's usually brewed at the end of the last season. So it's all the freshest crop of all the barley and the hops. And they'd put it away for the winter and break it out in March. And it's usually a pretty strong beer, I guess, as well. So this beer for us is all imported French barley and hops. And it's about a 7.5% alcohol. It's a smooth beer, so it'll sneak up on you as well. We expect to see some of the riders this year fall off their horses.
Tell us a little bit about what that Mardi Gras experience is like over there in Cajun country. How do y'all celebrate?
I guess I can tell you how we did it growing up, and then Louis can probably tell you about the history of it more than I can. But my grandparents grew up in a little small town called Bayou Portage. Portage is like to carry your boat across the water, which is how narrow this bayou is. You can literally walk across it. They would do the courier in those days. It was all these men would dress up in these real gaudy handmade costumes, and they'd cut up in French and scream and holler and till you gave them something, and then they'd leave the house.
And like an onion or a...
The prize was a chicken. They'd throw a live chicken out, and people would chase it. They'd get on their horses. Of course, they were all tissoulet, a little drunk.
Uh-huh.
And some of them would fall off their horses. But they'd cut up to give them an ingredient for the gumbo. And at the end of the day, they made a big pot and everybody would show up. And there was French music. It's really nice. It was kind of like utopia almost. Everybody got together and there was potato salad and desserts. It was just a blast.
And how about you, Louis? How do you celebrate Mardi Gras?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do, too.
Still.
Yeah, that's there's definitely a bunch of couriers still happening. There's Church Point, Mamou, Lance Meg, Lance Lejeune. It goes on and on. But either way, it's definitely about getting together and not hiding behind the mask, but just being somebody else for the day and letting yourself go. And like, you know, all the small towns where a lot of these happen, the social restrictions just out the water, you know, because in small towns, you know how it is socially.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, it's your one day to just completely let loose and anything goes on that day, really. And that's when it's your chance to go heckle your neighbors and they don't know who you are. So you get it all out on that day, you know. And then if you're lucky, you don't get whipped too bad. The whipping can be part of the traditional,
whipping.
You know, a real pelt, you know, you get tanned a little bit.
And each town has its own variation of the Mardi Gras song is the other neat thing. It sounds the same, you know, if you don't know French, but each little town has its own variation. And
how does the song go?
Le Mardi Gras s'en vient de tout partout, tout le tour, le tour de Moye. Ça passe une fois par an, monde de la charité. Quand même, c'est si un patate tout de gratin. And then it goes on to say all, you know, that's...
Could you translate for us?
Yeah, the Mardi Gras riders come from everywhere. Le Moye is, there's a couple translations of that. It could be the hub or it could be the stump. You know, it's kind of like this thing, to de Mardi Gras, all around the stump is where the Mardi Gras is. You kind of, you know, go in this little dance in a circle. We come once a year to ask for charity, for donations from the house, even if it's a potato or some gratin.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes on to say, oh, you know, will you accept this band of drunkards? Will you accept this band of Mardi Gras? We only come once a year. That's all we ask.
Oh, that is so wonderful.
Some towns like Mahmoud, I think they live just for that 2 days because there's nothing else going on the rest of the year.
So I understand that you are also working on a special new brew that's specially designed for drinking with crawfish.
That's right, Poppy. It's a Saison de Crevice. It's a Belgian-style Saison, which is a farmhouse brew. This one's brewed with rye, and rye in beer is the same thing like rye in bread. It gives that woody kind of spiciness to the beer. And it also has an imported Belgian yeast that throws a peppery flavor in as well. So this beer is a pretty flavorful beer. It's really spicy and flavorful, so it can compete with boiled crawfish. We've also putting it in 22-ounce bottles, so you don't have to make as many trips to the ice chest with your crawfish.
That's a good idea. And it was so lucky, crawfish season's early this year, so you've got something all ready to drink along with it. How did you determine what the flavor profile was going to be?
We kind of worked backwards, and that's how we do a lot of our beers. We know in our mind what we think will work, and so as far as the flavor, and so we have to work backwards with the ingredients. This is a Belgian style, and Belgian beers, and French beers for that matter, are really geared around the saison, or the season. And so you have a lot of latitude with those beers. And for us, it was that idea of we're going to take this saison and change it for different foods. And the first one was the crawfish. We have some other ones down the road with different versions of the saison. So in addition to the rye, which gives that spiciness, we use a lot of wheat. Because wheat is a refreshing beer. It kind of cleanses the palate, kind of calms the heat as well.
Well, I'm really looking forward to eating some boiled crawfish.
We've also worked with some French growers with this beer, hop growers. And instead of most breweries in America have to just buy their hops through a broker, we're getting them directly from the farm in France.
So, Carlos, I want to know what else new is coming down the pike from the brewery this year.
We have another new beer coming out next month in February. It's a variation of our Bière Joie, which is our coffee double. And doubles are a Belgian Trappist style of beer, usually pretty malty and also very high alcohol. We spike it with Mellow Joy coffee. This one we're calling the Lagniap edition. It's aged in Jack Daniel's barrels for several months, where it picks up a lot of toasted oak and vanilla flavors and some whiskey flavors as well. In that barrel, we're aging it on some vanilla, some cocoa nibs, and some locally grown chili peppers. It sounds like it's really too much Lagniap, maybe, but it actually works very well. We've been tasting it every week, and it's quite delicious. The Belgians brew a lot of their beers with this candy sugar. They don't make it in America, but basically they caramelize white sugar. It's delicious. So when we brew, you can tell because all the guys are like licking their fingers the whole time, sticking their hands in the bag. The beer's quite tasty, though. It's a complex beer, but it's not so complex that it's not approachable and enjoyable.
Well, the last time we talked to you, you were talking about what was then a new beer called Beer Noir, which was inspired by drinking coffee around the table all day and all night like Cajuns do. How does this beer differ from that one?
It's definitely a beer you sip. It's not something you would really want to drink after you've cut the grass.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a Beer Noir, it's a complex beer, but it's still light enough body to where you can go crawfishing or fishing and come back and knock back a few. Matter of fact, when we were brewing it, we buy this malt from France called a coffee roast malt. It's barley that's roasted to look like coffee. Gar Hatcher, our new brewmaster, he's working by himself, and we're all doing some other stuff. All of a sudden, he like screams like, "Dr. Watson, come see you." So we all run to see what's the matter. He goes, "Taste this malt." And it was barley, but it tasted exactly like French roast coffee.
That's fantastic.
I must say, I had the pleasure of trying some a couple weeks ago, and it was, I didn't even think I was drinking beer. It was like drinking the best cup of coffee I ever had, but it was just an amazing experience. So I can't wait to try it myself.
That tasting job, it's a hard job.
Huh? Right out the canister.
We're not drinking, we're working.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it would surprise a lot of people to know that, Louis, when you're not traveling with the Bayou Ramblers, you do a lot of PR and marketing for the brewery. And, you know, I've seen this before. Like, you just stroll right into a bar to talk to them about what beers they've got on tap and behind the bar. Is that a surprise to people when they look up and see it's you?
It's actually been a great balance, I could say. You know, being a musician has its ups and downs. It's very fun. You don't get rich unless, you know, you're like Justin Bieber or something like that. But I started last year, yeah, kind of doing some PR and stuff. And, yeah, walking into places that I've played and that I haven't played, and whether they know me or not, just introducing myself. I really love the product. I love the beer that they're making where I happen to live. I didn't even know. You know, I moved out there, come to find out there's a huge arts renaissance. There's a brewery coming up. And it's just such a great coincidence, or you know, whatever, however you explain these things that happen at the same time.
That's one of my favorite words for it. But y'all make such a great team.
I did an interview this morning real early, and they asked, what does Louis do at the brewery? I said, well, he's our ambassador to the United States.
And the world.
And the world.
And the distribution these days. You're really stretching out across the United States, aren't you?
We're all the way currently to Florida and up to Georgia. But we just found out we're getting into New York City next month. Louis is going up there for us. Louis is bringing his fiddle, and our other ambassador, Derek Domingue, is bringing his spatula. Apparently, a lot of people come to New Orleans from New York for vacations or for work, and they would go back to New York asking for the beer. And a distributor called and said, man, I'm getting calls all the time for LA 31 beer. We struck a deal, so we're going to be up there. I've never been, so we're kind of excited to be up there.
Well, I am so glad y'all traveled over to visit with us and brought us all this delicious news about the brewery. I can't wait for some crawfish beer and some Mardi Gras beer, and I'm just ready. So thanks, guys.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to come talk to you, Poppy.
We have a career costume ready for you in a couple of weeks.
Brewmaster Carlos Knott and Lost Bayou Rambler Louis Michaud. Brewing up some fun at Bayou Teche Brewery. New Orleanians cannot wait to see Hubig's Pies back on store shelves. When we come back, we'll learn what's in the works to make that dream a reality. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. On July 27th of 2012, Louisiana lost a culinary gem when the Hubig's Pie Factory burned to the ground in an early morning fire. A New Orleans business since 1922, the fire was an even more devastating blow to the Ramsey and Bowman families than the problems created by Hurricane Katrina. But after the fire, Hubig's Pie lovers everywhere banded together to help the Ramseys and Bowmans over this latest tragedy. Now, Hubig's Pie, third generation pie guy, Drew Ramsey, is here with good news for pie lovers everywhere. Drew, so good to see you again.
Well, thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
The last time we visited on Louisiana Eats was very shortly after the fire. It's been a long year, huh?
It has been a long year. It has been a long and circuitous path to get here.
Well, tell me a little bit about how the community came together to support you all in the business.
Well, it's truly unbelievable, and it was the silver lining in all of this is the thoughts, the prayers, the well wishes, the notes, the pats on the back, the hugs. Obviously, people had a very high opinion of Hubig's pies, and that means a lot. Tragedy of this level, catastrophe, would be devastating, I think, to any employer, any business, any family business in particular, and it was so for us. But when people showed up at the scene of the fire, afterwards, people bought T-shirts. The Po' Boy Festival let us set up a little booth. People came up to get a T-shirt, take a picture, tell us about how much they enjoyed the pies and that they had them at their wedding party, or people sent them to their child who was serving overseas because that's all they wanted, or something like that. Just the sheer amount of outpouring of support was truly touching.
Well, you already had a website that was up and running with merchandise on it, and obviously people all over the country didn't realize that if they went online on your website and bought pies, they weren't going to be getting any pies.
The morning of the fire was a Friday, and you know, they summoned us. We went down there crack of dawn in time to see the building fully engulfed and collapse. And what was on the forefront of our mind was not let's get to the website and, you know,
right,
update the merchandise, the items on the website. You know, we had 38 employees. They were all safe. There were some people in the building when it caught on fire. Nobody was hurt. Everybody got out. The fire department did a really good job. I mean, we had a complete 100% total loss, but we were in the historic Marigny. We were not just next door, but immediately next to our neighbors. And we had a fairly large piece of property that kind of took up the middle of a block. I think we have over a dozen neighbors. Nobody lost their homes. Nobody was injured. Nobody was hurt. So that was the top priority. You know, we needed to recuperate. We needed to figure out what options were available to us. We needed to make sure our employees landed on their feet. Getting to the website was not the top priority. And by the time we did, there was thousands of orders for pies. And there was just an unbelievable amount of pie orders. And
yeah,
we had to contact each one of those people and say, we're sorry, you know, it's not possible right now. And
but the response you got from those people was kind of sweet
and
of itself.
It was very sweet in and of itself. It was, keep the money. You need it more than I do right now. It was, don't worry about it. Send it to me when you can. It was whatever's easier for you. Even when there was a price discrepancy, not in their favor. Just people were unbelievably generous and unbelievably understanding.
And then you created an employee fund,
and that's
where the money went.
We try to get everybody a refund. We try to swap out merchandise for people. There was a lot of vendors in the city that wanted to put a Hubig's Pie T-shirt on their shelf or do something for the cause. I'm actually reluctant to start to list all the ones that have done that.
Of course.
I know I'm going to forget somebody. But
yeah,
the Dirty Coast T-shirt shop.
Flirty Girl.
Yeah, you got to love Flirty Girl.
Gotta love her.
Belladonna had a day at the spa, and they gave a percentage. Again, an unbelievable amount of outpouring of support. And we did. We started a little fund called Friends of Hubig's, and the money raised through those efforts was put into a fund, and we were able to get some money to the employees.
Yeah, yeah. Give them a little coverage and a little backup. And then, of course, for the last year, the Hubig's Pie Company has basically become a sort of ad hoc, by accident, merchandise retail business.
Well, there is definitely some of that. And as far as sales and money coming in, that is really all that we do. You can sell a T-shirt, a belt.
You can buy a lovely tie.
Buy a tie.
Yeah.
That was what we had left. I would really be reluctant to say that's what we were reduced to. We are...
Okay.
we are... temporarily out of business pie company. We spend a lot of our time looking for used equipment, maintaining contact with our suppliers, our employers, our customers. By customers in that sense, I mean the shop owners, the people that we do direct store delivery to. And whenever possible, our ultimate customer, you know, the people who's going to buy the pie and enjoy it. We have traveled to different auctions around the country to look at equipment we might find useful. Lord, we've looked at dozens of pieces of property.
So now, finally, you're able to report some good news. What is the current status of the Hubig's Pie rebuild?
Well, we are of New Orleans, and we are always of the mindset that we wanted to stay in New Orleans. We could statutorily rebuild in the 2400 block of Dauphine Street, which we own, but that's not the most realistic alternative. It's a no-truck route. It's a residential neighborhood. We have settled on a piece of property just down the road, still in the Marigny. NOCA would sell us that piece of property. It's between Burgundy and Rampart on Press Street, or
yes.
Cotton Press Street, if you're a historian. It's directly across the street from the railway, and it is located almost smack dab in the middle of what I'm going to call the NOCA corridor, which is between NOCA on Charter Street and St. Claude Avenue. We are specking out a piece of land that is bigger than what we need, but we will be able to have some off-street parking, so there'll be no pressure on the neighborhood. And the amount of property that's left in that plot of land is almost perfect for another parking lot. And as NOCA develops, they're going to need more parking. So mm-hmm. it's going to be a very symbiotic relationship. We are going to build a pie factory. We don't really care what a pie factory looks like.
Yeah.
We need to make good pies on the inside of it. So we have given NOCA the authority on the outside design of mm-hmm. the building. And what's really cool, I think, is we're thinking about making it just plain, just absolutely plain, which your listeners might think, you know, my goodness, that's not special at all. Looks like an apartment blank wall in Moscow or something. But the idea is to let NOCA students, NOCA faculty, graduated NOCA artists hang their art or do a mural on it. And one design is such that there's actually tabs on it that the art can be rotated out. And we're happy to do that. I mean, you know, we don't need to be – people aren't going to come to look at the outside of Hubig's because it's a pie factory. And if the kids can showcase their art, we're happy, happy, happy.
And then they will come to look at the outside
and then they will
of
come.
Hubig's.
Yeah,
you can pretty much guarantee that. Yeah. What about all the old specialized equipment that you lost in the fire? Are you having that rebuilt?
We have recovered as much of that as we can. We have it at different warehouses around town. We do have people working on it. Some stuff is able to be rehabilitated. Some stuff we're going to have the manufacturer duplicate, but we're actually going to duplicate it exactly as it was. In particular, the pie forming machine is going to be identical. We have frozen pies ready to make the new pies exactly.
So when are we going to get to eat those little fried pies again?
Well, I would tell you what the schedule is. I would tell you when we have to present stamped plans. I would tell you when we can get to a purchase agreement with NOCA. We can drive the first piling, build it, fill it, make a pie. However, anybody who's listening who's ever remodeled one powder room bathroom
yes.
knows about time and money, and it's going to be a little bit different. I would think reasonably and realistically that we should have pies
yes.
within a year.
Okay.
Ask me that question again once the first piling has been driven into the ground, and I'll have a better estimate.
Well, thank you so much for doing this interview, and I am so thrilled to know that it's going to all be okay.
Well, I do think it's all going to be okay. And the support that we have gotten from every corner of this city really makes it easier for me to say that. From the state government, the city government, the administration, the city and state both have economic development teams, our council people at large, the city planning commission. I wouldn't even want to start to tell thank you to everybody because
right.
I know that I would forget some of them. But we have gotten a tremendous amount of support, and everybody is genuinely interested in seeing this project succeed. And that makes life a little easier.
Well, thank you so much, Drew.
Sure.
Drew Ramsey of Hubig's Pie. The online site Buzz.com recently named Good Eggs as the number one thing for food lovers in 2013. When we spoke with local Good Eggs founder, Tess Monahan, she brought along a new supplier, Nate Winner, the NOLA pie guy, to explain how the program was working for him. With a recent cash infusion of $8.5 million, Good Eggs is about to explode both locally and nationally. For instance, now there's a NOLA warehouse and delivery truck, and lots more Good Eggs news to come in 2014.
So Good Eggs is a web platform that brings together local food producers and local food consumers. So the company was started in San Francisco 2 years ago by a group of Silicon Valley people and a group of people who'd worked in the local food system out there. And they came together and they said, okay, we want to build some sort of technology that will support local food systems. So the Good Eggs team talked to all these producers, and what they kept hearing was these producers wanted new ways to sell food directly to their customers. A lot of these vendors participated at farmers markets, which they loved. They loved being able to talk to their customers and to, you know, tell their customers about the food and to get those retail profit margins, to be honest. But farmers markets, you know, there are only so many a week and only so many people can get to them to buy there. And also, to participate in a farmer's market, the producer has to sit there for a certain number of hours and bring all their stuff there. So it's a great opportunity, but Good Eggs decided that they wanted to help producers find more opportunities to sell to those same types of customers who they could sell to at a farmer's market.
Let's be specific a little bit with New Orleans, because I think it's fascinating. Am I correct? Is New Orleans your second or third city to roll out?
Third city. Okay. We started in Brooklyn at the beginning of this year, and then we got started in New Orleans on a small scale at the beginning of April and have kind of slowly built things up. By the end of the summer, we anticipate having a couple of dozen vendors up and running on our site. We're working towards doing full-scale delivery in the fall.
Where, and how big would that range be of delivery?
So what we're working towards is having a couple of dozen different businesses that you can order from and have that food delivered anywhere in the city of New Orleans. That's the goal come maybe September, October. That's what we're hoping for.
So right now, where's pickup?
So right now, the way it works is that we have a number of different options for pickup and delivery, and most of them are being completed by the vendors themselves. So for example, Nate, he'll deliver in the city of New Orleans. He'll deliver a pie for $5, Nate, is it?
That's correct. $4.99 extra charge. I'll deliver to any home or office located in New Orleans.
So people can choose, okay, if I just want to pay for the pie and I want to pick it up at Nate's currently based out of the PJs on Magazine, and then they just pay for the cost of the pie. Or they can say, well, I want the convenience of home delivery. I'll pay that extra $4.99 and then Nate will deliver it. Every vendor is doing fulfillment that makes sense for them. So Hollygrove Market and Farm, for example, they already were doing home delivery when we approached them.
Their selection was really fantastic between herbs and starter plants, and it was very enticing on the site.
Yeah, they already have such an amazing network of farmers and other producers that they work with. We're really excited to have them on board. And they were working with another software company to do their home delivery, and it was just not a very friendly software program, either for the customer or for Hollygrove. It wasn't giving them a lot of flexibility of how they could set different products up on the site. It was pretty limited, and people had to opt into a 4 or 8 or 12 week subscription. And they had to pay
Which
for that up front.
A little bit more like your standard CSA type setup, community supported agriculture, where you get a box and it's kind of a mystery box, but from Good Eggs, it's never a mystery.
Right. That's a huge part of the kind of consumer end issue that we're trying to address, is people want to support local food and they want to buy local. But there's always a tension between, one, do I have the money to pay up front for a CSA share? Because typical CSA shares, you're paying, you know, several hundred dollars, maybe more, at the beginning of a 8 or 12 week season. And some people don't have that cash flow. And then the other piece is then, well, what if you go out of town during that time period? Or what if you just really don't like certain vegetables? So we're trying to give people a much wider selection to pick and choose the local food that they want to buy. Another piece is the education piece. So there are people who shop at Hollygrove regularly who would be interested in learning about other local food businesses who might not know about them. So another aspect of the Good Eggs site is it provides a forum for people to see a full range of different types of local food businesses. And they go there to shop from Hollygrove, but then they see, oh, wow, this guy's making local pies with local ingredients, and these guys are doing this amazing grass-fed lamb. And people start to cross-shop. And it really, we see this platform as a place that supports all of the businesses involved because they get to engage in this community.
And is this site intended for every man? So it doesn't matter if you are a mother feeding a small family or a chef. Do you get both types of customers on the site?
That's a really good question. So we are definitely first and foremost a consumer-facing site. There are ways that chefs and other institutional and wholesale type customers can use our site. And we do have some producers in New Orleans that are using it to sell small quantities of produce to restaurants because there's so many urban growers now in New Orleans that are forging these great direct relationships with restaurants. In San Francisco, where the site was started, the Good Eggs team found that most of the restaurants there that wanted to source locally already had really solid relationships with farmers. Because in the Bay Area and the surrounding areas, there are a lot of farms that are a little more developed as far as the diversity of product and the kind of how they sell product to customers.
Well, when you're growing in the Garden of Eden, it's all very easy. It's a little
right.
different when you go to the swamp.
The swamp is a different kind of challenge. So in San Francisco, they didn't see as much of a need to serve restaurant and institutional customers with this software. But as we move into other cities where those connections between restaurants and farmers are not as well developed, we're starting to see the need for that type of platform. So that's just one of the challenges that we're going to be adapting to as we roll out a wholesale platform.
Well, Nate, I have been watching your pie business since you first appeared on the scene baking pies as the pie guy. But for people who perhaps have never met you, how did this pie thing start?
Absolutely. So as you remember, I started in about late 2011. I've always been a fan of baking and pastry. I'm from Shreveport, Louisiana originally, and there's an old institution in Shreveport called Strawn's. Strawn's is just the local diner. It's where everybody goes for a good plate lunch, and at the end of a meal, you get a slice of homemade icebox pie. Seasonal fruits or chocolate or butterscotch, whatever your flavor, they've got it. It's piled high with homemade whipped cream, and it was delicious, and I missed that. I'd been living in New Orleans. I've been here about 5 years now, and at the time when I started Nola Pie Guy, there wasn't a place that was known for having just a really solid pie that was their signature item. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to bring that little bit of nostalgia with me to New Orleans because pie is something that I think, especially in America, not necessarily just the South or Louisiana, but America in general, growing up here, everybody has some connection to pie. It's a very nostalgic dessert. It takes everybody to a certain place, be it their childhood or otherwise, and they all have their favorite one. So I wanted to start to create that with my own business and my love of sweets and kind of share that in the city.
And so how did you and the Good Eggs find each other?
So I was introduced through Tess about a year and a half ago, and we were reintroduced by a mutual friend more recently. And she said, you know, Nate, I've kind of been following you with Nola Pie Guy. I'm getting involved with something I think you could really benefit from. Can we set up a time to talk next week? I said, absolutely. So we met in my neighborhood right down the street from the PJs, where I'm doing all my baking now, and had a good talk with Tess and another friend from the original Bay Area Good Eggs team, and it sounded like a wonderful idea on a whole lot of levels, and I was eager to get on board.
So what are you hoping that this relationship's going to do for you?
Sure. So for me personally, it makes sense on a couple different levels, one for New Orleans and one just for small business. So as a small business person, overhead is always an issue, right? So the onboarding process from a producer's perspective, they couldn't have made it easier. They hired a local photographer to take good pictures of my food for the web stand. I've got a variety of buyer options. So instead of just selling a single pie to a customer online, there's an automatic option for them to subscribe. So it just makes it that much easier to generate repeat business, which is, you know, it's a gold mine. That's what I want as a producer. I want those repeat customers. It puts me into a network that's very forward thinking and progressive in this city and kind of attracts that like-minded crowd and set up events. So we've done everything from Good Eggs events. I've got a very user-friendly web platform, and that's user-friendly for my customers and for me as a business owner. If I know that I've only got one pallet of strawberries to work with, and from that pallet I'm only going to be able to make a dozen or so pies, then I can set my maximum to my strawberry pies that week to 12. Mm-hmm. And as soon as those 12 are set up, it's going to show sold out on the website. So it just makes it very easy for me to own and operate a small business, so I don't have to worry about so much on the technical end and can focus on the part I love most, which is making the pies.
Does anyone worry at all that there's perhaps some jeopardy of something being lost in a digital transaction versus a face-to-face interaction?
Absolutely. And that was addressed in the initial meeting I had with Good Eggs. And that's I didn't even have to bring it up. They made it a point up front to tell me, like, we don't want this to be something where, like, you're shipping pies nationwide. Like, the purpose of Good Eggs is to put the producer and the farmer's face in front of the customer and the end user. There's kind of an emotional connection there that can get lost in some online businesses. They're very diligent about making sure that that's not the case with Good Eggs and each of their producers. So they want people that, like, for instance, where I can deliver the pie to your front door. I don't do pickup only. I love that customer interaction. And it's great for businesses that are starting up because you're able to put a face to the name, right?
Oh, I'm sure that people, you get a big smile when you show up with a pie at somebody's front door. I'm sure of that. Well, it's really exciting. It's really visionary. And I'm hoping that after people hear about this on Louisiana Eats, it'll inspire both producers and shoppers to jump on the Good Egg Network, because it all sounds good to me. So come back and see us.
We will, Poppy. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Poppy. Bye-bye.
Tess Monahan and the NOLA Pie Guy, Nate Winner, part of the visionary new food system, the Good Eggs Network. We'll be back from our next short break to learn just what our Louisiana Eats house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, are eating when they're on the road. Stay right there. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Band Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes were about to release their new CD, 2000 Days, we sat down to discuss how the online fundraising program Kickstarter did kickstart the project. Let's start off. Please introduce yourselves and let us know, what do you play in the band?
My name is Johnny Sketch, and I am the guitarist, cellist, and lead vocalist for the band.
I am David Pomerlo, Electric Dave, and I'm a bass player.
My name is Dirty Johnny. Some people call me Andre. And I play the drums and I sing backup vocals.
Okay. So, first of all, how long did it take you to produce this new CD?
The CD has been being written for most of the last 2,000 days, really, which is thus the title.
Hence the name.
Right, exactly. But really just to make the record, it all began with getting the funds together, and that had a lot to do with this new thing called Kickstarter, which has really been amazing for a lot of musicians and artists to get their projects off the ground. Sometimes you just don't have the funds available to get going. Studio time isn't cheap, and if you want to do it right, you really need help. So once we got that put together and people really amazingly stepped up and put up a lot of money generously, and we, within a month, were ready to make a record. So that was
Mark,
the beginning of it.
I imagine there's a bunch of people who probably have never even heard of Kickstarter.
Right.
So would you explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. I'm not even sure that it's been around for all that long. I mean, I know it's been around for a few years now, but it's a website where you can sign up your project or whatever your idea is, be it some art project or trip as a student. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do. But essentially what you do is you put your idea on the website. People can go and look through them and decide if they want to make a donation to contribute to, like in our case, making a record. And what we do in return is we offer them incentives. Like, for example, at a certain level, we'll send you, you get a copy of the CD before we sell it to anybody. And you get a poster that's a limited edition thing. It's a lot like actually public radio when you guys do your sponsorship drives.
That's
people
a great
put up
analogy.
The money in advance, and then in return, you get sort of preferential treatment or whatever you
and
want to call it.
And we get to decide what the incentives are. So I think one of them, maybe at the $700 level, $500 level, we offered to have you over to one of our houses and make dinner for you.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't tell him I was going to cook dinner. Thank
no, we
you.
Did. We did.
We actually, we have to write 3 or 4 songs that for
really?
A certain amount, we said
yeah,
we would write and perform a song for you.
It was so much fun, too. We haven't done them all yet, but the first one we did is like a demo was hilarious. I mean, I want to put it in our set. It's so funny when you get someone's name and you're like, okay, Jessica. What are we going to say to Jessica? Thanks for your money.
No, it has to be a little better than that.
Well, you'd think that, Poppy, but it really isn't much better.
It's already sold millions in Japan.
That's right. That's right. Gosh. Jessica, thank you for your money is huge in Scandinavia.
So, this is a food show, remember.
Let's talk about food.
So, when you all were spending those 10-hour days in the studio, what were you eating and drinking?
This is a perfect time because our other records would have been not as fun an answer, but Tracy Freeman had the genius idea to stop at Dornax on the way to the studio every day and buy like 3 loaves of po' boy bread and Scissese ham, pastrami,
all the in-house meats from the deli counter.
Right, this sliced Swiss, tomatoes, lettuce. I mean, it was the most genius idea because all the, you know, po' boy, you want a little guy, you can make a little guy.
Yeah.
You want
you're
the
really
full
hungry?
Foot long, go to work,
that's
you know.
The way I do it.
And it was a great way to take a break. You go in and build a sandwich.
Fueled by Dornax.
We really should have gotten
we're not
an endorsement.
Sponsored
from
by
them
at all. They've done nothing. But it was really cool, and I'm a big sandwich fan. They call me Captain Sandwich, so I was in heaven every day making up sandwiches. We had egg salad, we had tuna salad. But the po' boy thing was absolutely genius. I would recommend it to anybody making a record. It was great. And it was actually pretty cost effective, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Yeah.
Well, I've been wanting to do this interview, quite honestly, since last summer when I got the wackadoodle email that you sent me, Mark, that said, Poppy, help. We're in Pensacola, and we really want bread pudding, but all we have is a whole lot of Krispy Kreme donuts.
No, they weren't. Yes. Just to clarify, they weren't Krispy Kremes. They were from the Donut Hole in Destin, Florida, and we eat there every time we go. And the woman, it was like 3 in the morning after the gig, she's throwing away these giant bags of donuts. I just couldn't look him in the eye and not ask her. I said, are you going to throw those out? Because we'll take them. She gave us, I mean, I don't know, what do we have, like 200 donuts? We had like 200 donuts. It was a watershed moment in my life, Poppy.
Okay, so how'd the bread pudding turn out?
It was amazing. It was so good.
It's all about the sauce.
It's all about the whiskey.
Really,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, it was excellent. I mean, we never fail to eat well in Destin. Speaking of food, that's one of the places.
And it's such a different thing in the studio. You want to be working most of the time, so it's just quick sandwiches in the kitchen, back in the studio. With the road, you have a 4-hour show and maybe 2-hour sound check, and the rest of the day you don't have anything to do besides travel. So we do get a little more creative with restaurants and stuff when we're on the road.
Well, we used to do in our old van. Our old van's name was Murph.
Uh-huh.
She treated us very well for many years. So we used to have the Murph Special. That's a great sandwich. So the Murph Special, a lot of times I would make the sandwiches and pass them back. So I got to know, like,
no mayonnaise.
No tomatoes for David.
No tomatoes for David.
Everything for Mark.
It's basically just a cheese sandwich, right?
Genetic.
It's just a cheese
It was a cheese sandwich, but there were, you know, we'd put cucumber and tomato and
sprouts.
Mm-hmm. A lot of veggies.
So when you're traveling, and I know you've been back to a bunch of the same places at the same time, yeah. Any particular spots besides the donut hole that
we're
gonna
stand
out?
Another show for we're going to need another show.
One of the places I wanted to mention is the Cookout, which they have out in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But it's cheap, and it's real good, and it's just it really tastes like some dude is out back cooking on a little tiny grill.
It's greasy spoon.
Yum.
What's the place in Baltimore that has all
the Abbey?
The Abbey has.
We always go to the Abbey. Yeah, it's
all
like a
kinds of
gourmet
different
burger
meats.
Place.
Yeah, for burgers.
Last time I was there, I had kangaroo.
Kangaroo.
They had crocodile, yeah. Elk.
Oh my god!
Ostrich. Always have
the
turkey.
Abbey
always have
in
bison.
Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. It's a little tiny place in an alley in the
Federal Hill
area, right by the 8x10 where we play.
Strangely enough,
it's
the
so
best
good.
Philly cheesesteak I've had was not in Philadelphia. We had many in Philadelphia. Ooh. It's in Key West, Florida.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're gonna get in trouble.
But the guys in
from
Philadelphia's
Philly.
Defense, well, the guys that run that place are in Key West. Mr. Z's in Key West.
Mr. Z's in Key West has the best Philly cheesesteak I've had.
We've spent half the money we've made in Key West at Mr. Z's. Because it's good pizza. I mean, you wouldn't think it's
really. It's open until like 5 in the morning.
Yep. They're always grumpy, but just enough.
Just enough.
So I know that, you know, the guys who are in the major leagues, where I know you all are going as soon as you get this Grammy.
Exactly.
Like, they send riders ahead.
Yeah,
where,
we've heard of those.
Yeah. So you all don't have any special requirements? Like, do you even beg for water? What do you do?
We need water and a case of beer.
Okay.
Yeah, and we don't even specify what kind of beer. But you'd be surprised how many gigs we show up and they've put like 20 little cups of water on the stage, and that's our allowance. Like, I don't think we're not Journey or anything, but give, I mean, you can't get a case of water.
I can't get a bottle of, a whole
I
bottle
know, a
for
whole
myself.
Bottle of water for me. Dave and I are sharing one. It gets real awkward.
Oh, that's
you know?
Nasty.
And it's nothing we mind too much, because in a lot of the cities we go, we know people who are dying to feed us. It's my favorite right. side effect of playing music is people want to feed the band.
That's true.
So who's feeding you on the road?
Just friends we've met, friends who have moved out of New Orleans.
Oh, do them a favor. And like, drop their names and tell me
what
they
cook. Our
friend
Jab Wilson and Destin is one of the meanest. He gets that fresh Destin fish and knows what to do with it.
The Wolfson family in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of places we go to, you know, even if they don't cook, people are anxious to take us out to eat at whatever place they think is great.
Uh-huh.
I can think of just recently, again, in Key West, we were staying with the Fowlers. After these guys left, I got taken out to this place. It was like the Rusty Anchor or something. And it was so perfectly Key West. It was way off the beaten path. It was all locals, and it could not have been any better. I mean, I was in heaven. It was like mm-hmm. red and white checkered tablecloths. They haven't decorated since the 60s, and it was just so good. You know,
that's great.
But people are – I think Dave's right. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being in the group is people know that it's not fun to be eating a Subway sandwich every time you stop for gas. We want some real food, and people are really sensitive to that, and they take us out to really cool places wherever we go.
So tell me, you go to all sorts of venues and you see all sorts of things out there. And we talked with Ann Churchill, who is a local caterer. And Ann travels on the road with the Dave Matthews Band. And she just told us like the most crazy, like 11 buses and a truck just for the food equipment.
Wow.
And yeah, like really big. So what of that sort of the big time have you guys ever rubbed up against?
We've come close at a few festivals. That's usually the biggest, the closest they'll let us get to it. We've been to the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival. It was a great one. They were so cool with the artists. Didn't matter if you were the headliner, the Black Crows, or us. Everybody got these big laminates, and they treated us like gold. I mean,
massages.
The food was amazing.
Massages!
Food.
Sunday
drink,
morning, everybody
unlimited.
Had their own bottle of champagne for mimosas.
Yeah. They had unlimited microbrew beer. It was wonderful. You know, sometimes the festivals do a really good job of just saying, if you're an artist and you're here to play, we're going to kind of all treat you the same. That's the best we ever get. And I think most artists and performers
and
agree.
Also
really
some
works,
some
you know?
Venues are just very professional no matter who you are. The Belly Up in Aspen was one of our our favorite
amazing.
You
oh,
know
yeah.
pre-show meals. They sat us down, put the big serving dishes out, and it was just amazing.
Like the employee meal at a nice restaurant.
Yeah, it was like,
you know,
salmon,
it's gonna be
they
a
had
good
mixed
meal.
Green like really good mixed green salad. It was good eating.
Very
for
nice
sure.
And then I mean you appreciate that because you see the opposite so much. You know, you really remember. I mean, the fact that I'm mentioning Belly Up today, that was
2007.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
Well, and even at, you know, like Dave said at one point, he knew that we had made it when we played at Tipitina's here in town.
Yeah.
And we had Popeyes waiting for us.
They put Popeyes.
That
chicken.
Was huge.
That's a big step at Tipitina's.
That was huge.
Really. And the locals will know what I'm talking about. If you go backstage and they've got the 20-piece mixed or whatever, and the sides, it's not necessarily the best game fuel. I'm not going to say it's good to eat a couple of wings and thighs.
But you feel like a rock star.
But it is so nice
that's
to
a
have
certain
it
level
there.
Of success.
Yeah, it like fuels
like,
you up like a rock star.
Like any gig at Tipitina's, when you come back at set break, all the other people upstairs have eaten all of it. So you better eat as much as you can before it's gone.
That's right.
Our Louisiana Eats house band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, and their latest CD release, 2000 Days. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org and louisianaeatsradio.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company and LCI Workers' Comp. Our media sponsor is Louisiana Life Magazine,
the magazine of a great state. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Thanks to executive producer Thomas Walsh, consulting producer Margaret Howes, and sound engineer Guy Mulladew. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.